3, 2, 1, go!
Welcome back, everybody, to the Triad of the Force podcast, the podcast from Puerto Rican friends coming together to do deep dives into Star Wars and other nerd-related media. This is season 4, and today we kind of want to do a little bit of a recap of the movies that we've been getting this summer so far, because it's been, like, a pretty good summer for movies. Some have flopped, some we haven't gotten yet, and we're kind of gearing up for the summer that is promising to have a lot of blockbusters, and we're kind of also want to talk about a little bit of the upcoming Jedi projects, like especially Rey's film. So it's kind of like a smorgasbord of some films that we're getting this summer and upcoming in the future. So
a palate cleanser, if you will.
Yeah.
To kind of restart the summer and get into like the latter half of the year, especially since, you know,
we've been slightly obsessed with Indiana Jones.
And we always say we're Star Wars and other nerd related media. And this year we haven't really been talking about other nerd related media. it'll be nice to kind of stop and look back and look forward, because you know we always have to look back a little bit. And it was interesting because we, right before we started recording, we were actually talking about Indiana Jones, surprise surprise, and how if you listen to the last episode with Alex Damon, you've probably got the vibe that he enjoyed the film. And we honestly, legitimately believe it's a good movie. But in looking at its box office, it's not doing too hot. Obviously, I'm not a box office analyst or financial person for any of these things. So I don't know if we can consider it a flop. It's still 1 week into its theatrical run. So who knows what's going to happen in the future. But it was definitely interesting to see, right? Like, the first post-Disney acquisition a Lucasfilm theatrical release that it's not a Star Wars thing do not so well, considering that it's Harrison Ford's return to the franchise after 15 years, I think it is, since Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. And considering that it's better than Kingdom of the Crystal Skull by a considerable amount, to all of a sudden see that it's kind of doing, I think it's doing, I haven't checked the numbers for The Flash, but I think it's doing better than The Flash, but still
it was still a lot more expensive than The Flash.
Not doing too what were your expectations? Like, did you think that Indy was going to rock the box office? What were your expectations of like how this film was going to do, even though actually surprisingly we've never ever talked about how movies do at the box office, how much money they take in, because that's never really
what we talk about.
But I think in this case, it's particularly interesting to kind of look back on, because like what went wrong? Everything should have been going right for this movie. So what do you think?
I honestly don't know what happened. I mean, I saw it on the day that it premiered, which in Puerto Rico is on Thursdays. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we went to an early film because we like doing early. So we went at like 2 p.m. or something. But I was expecting the theater to be packed and it wasn't.
Well, people are at work on Thursday. Well,
I know what you mean. But sometimes for films that are expected to be huge, it doesn't matter. All those first days, you can't even find tickets. So it was not really what I was expecting. It was definitely an older crowd. So it is people, you know, it is your dad's film, kind of. I think that's might have been what hurt it. That they waited too long to make it. 15 years is a long time. Harrison Ford is getting old.
Not getting old. He's old. He's already old. There. He got there. He's there. Just because he looks great and, you know, it's in great condition. That doesn't mean the man's not. He's 80, 81, I think.
So, and I don't know. I think the marketing for it was really good. I was really excited about it. I've heard people that aren't necessarily Indiana Jones fans, like when they watch the trailers, they'd be like, oh, I'm kind of excited to see that. Mm-hmm. So it seems like they did a good job. The premiere looked like it was amazing. They brought John Williams back. I mean, it seemed and it was a fitting end to Indiana Jones. So I think it really is. And we were talking about this earlier a little bit, that there's so many blockbusters this summer that it kind of fell between the cracks of this younger audience made me just not caring that much about Indiana Jones anymore. Because 15 years ago was the last installment and it wasn't good.
It wasn't good in the sense of critical reviews, even though if you look at the Rotten Tomatoes, and I know Rotten Tomatoes scores don't mean anything, but just to start using some metrics, technically, Kingdom of the Crystal Skull has a better, at least critics score than Dial of Destiny, which, you know, it's one of those things where you look back and it's just like, oh, people were panning this, but so it's kind of, for me, it kind of shows like how disingenuous like some reviewers are nowadays looking like at modern Lucasfilm properties, because I don't think there's that much cynicism with other properties as there is with Lucasfilm, but Kingdom of the Crystal Skull killed the box office. It was like the highest grossing film of this year, I think it was. It did like over $700 million when I checked that earlier this week. So like, financially, Kingdom of the Crystal Skull cleaned house. It did very well, and you know, it was a home run for Lucasfilm. Well, but if you think about it, it kind of makes sense, because it was it was kind of like the Phantom Menace of the Indiana Jones. It's like it was coming the first back one we got to see years. In the theaters. Exactly. Yeah. So I think there was like a lot of hype in that sense, because it was we you and I and like our siblings and our friends were like that.
Grew up watching them.
We were growing up. Yeah. We were that first generation post our parents seeing it back when it originally came out to finally get indie. And now with Dial of Destiny, I feel like it's like one generation removed, right? So it's just like Gen Z that's like going to see indie. But I don't feel like, and maybe I'm wrong because I don't have a lot of Gen Z friends. Maybe you know this better since you're in school now. But I don't feel like Gen Z has like that attachment
love for indie that we
indie, and they, I don't feel like they grew up with it the same way that we did. So I feel in a way like, maybe people were jaded with Indiana Jones and it's just like, oh, well, it left a bad taste in our mouth last time with Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. And now Harrison Ford's even older. So do I want to see that? And after all the disasters, quote unquote, because people let themselves be guided by headlines with all the Star Wars movies, like how good can Disney do with Indiana Jones if they already, quote unquote, ruined Star Wars? So like, I don't know if like all of this kind of coalesced into creating a environment to not go see Indiana Jones, well, to not go out and see it in droves, because people did go out. Like, it had, if this were a movie that were half the cost that it cost to make, it would have been a box office success, because it did $60 million in its opening weekend. That's actually good numbers. The problem is when you contextualize that it cost $300 million to make, and then it's just like, oh, it kind of, you know, shifts things. But do you think it's those things, or what you were saying initially about just the massive summer competition that it's having this summer? Because this summer, as opposed to like all these COVID, because we're in the first post-COVID summer, right? And like, and I say post-COVID, I don't mean that COVID's done, COVID's still a thing, but like, you know, we've acclimated to the COVID, so then that's,
and people are actually starting to go back to the theater more comfortably and more often, so it's a big summer.
Yeah, so all the last two summers, there were films, but there wasn't like all these blockbusters that came out. So how do you feel? Like, do you think, or maybe it's a combination of both. What do you think?
I actually think it's a combination of both, because there, I think that a negative environment around the film was created, because everything you read online, there were a lot of people ahead of the movie coming out, like being very harsh about the film. So, and that tends to change people's minds about if they're excited or not excited to watch it. And then you combine that with all the other films that are coming out, and going to the theater, especially in the States, it's expensive to go to the movies. You have to pick and choose what movies you think, oh, I have all these streaming services that I already pay for, so which movies can I wait for them to be released to watch them at home? Because I'm already paying for it.
That's a good point.
I'm already paying for the streaming service, so I'm going to get it once it's released. And what do I pay that extra money to actually sit in the theater and watch it?
So, and when you go to the movie theater, it's not just your ticket, right? Because you want some popcorn, you want some nachos, you want whatever the hell you want. And so it adds up. It adds up. It's expensive. Like here, like I go to the Alamo, because the Alamo Draft House, which is a very good movie theater chain that finally opened in Chicago, which I was very excited for. But, you know, it's a kind of a higher end theater experience. So it comes with a higher end theater price. And tickets are, what, between $12 to $15? Yeah. So I was used to, when I was back home, paying $5 for movie theater tickets, and like and they still have gone up. Like, contextually, ticket prices in Puerto Rico are also expensive when you consider like the economics of the island. So like, what, like, what, last time I was there, what were they, like $9 or something?
Well, and it depends where you go, because Azuponel, San Patricio, which is right next to where I live, they revamped it, and now it's like, it has a bar and like a restaurant, and it's all the reclinable seats and everything. So I think they are like $13 now.
Oh,
that's Puerto Rico. Yeah,
that's a lot. That's
expensive.
That's super expensive for back home. Yep. At least the Cine Combo is still like $6, $6 or $7.
I think so. Yeah.
So still, at least in the food department, it's still cheaper. But yeah, but you have to make that choice, and it's actually something
that I wasn't thinking when you said. Well, now that we actually go there, that they have the bar, obviously we're gonna get some scotch to watch the movie. It's not just gonna be Diet Coke, you know. So, so that adds up.
Please, that goes without saying. No, but you said something that I hadn't think about, which is the streaming aspect of it, especially with how complicated the streaming landscape is right now, with like Paramount Plus and Disney Plus and Netflix and Amazon Prime and all
Max
of them and Apple TV Plus. It's so hard to keep track of them, and obviously if you have all of them, it's really expensive. So if you have all of them, you're gonna say, especially after you got used to having films come out at the same time and you're seeing them at home, you're like, why would I go pay more to go to the movies when I can just wait couple weeks and see the exact same thing from the comfort of my home, and I can pause and go to the bathroom, pause and get food and all these things. I mean, I like the movie theaters. I prefer the movie theater experience to watching something at home. But lots of people like the convenience of home. So it's interesting to see how blockbusters are behaving these days, because movies that
how
you
the
think
landscape
are gonna
has changed, because sometimes back in the day, when you were debating if you were going to see a movie, because it would take a long time sometimes to get released. So a film would come out of the theaters and you wouldn't be able to like rent it at Blockbuster until like months later. But now that you have the streaming services, sometimes they're still running in the theaters and they're already released to the streaming service. So that time change is like, oh, but I'm going to get it at home in like a couple weeks, so why would I do the extra effort? So I think all of that movie watching landscape has changed so much from when we were kids. That it's kind of harder to predict how things are going to do now.
Yeah, because Harrison Ford back with, and maybe that was part of the marketing that was missing. It's like just marketing it as the last time that not just Harrison Ford, but Steven Spielberg, George Lucas, John Williams, and Harrison Ford were going to collaborate in this, and Karen Allen. Well, but Karen Allen would have been a spoiler, even though you know what I mean. But like this last time that all of this iconic group of creators were going to be together to make an Indiana Jones movie, and how it's in a way, maybe historic is hyperbolic, but everything's history if you think about it. But the end of an era for this filmmaking squad, because it's, you know, when you think about it in hindsight, it's kind of sentimental in that way. It's just like we grew up with all of the, like with George Lucas and Steven Spielberg and John Williams and Harrison Ford making these movies since like 40 years ago, and now they're, you know, and they were like, you know, young, well, not young, but you know, they were like these creators that are just doing all these films that we're growing up with, and now all this time later they're on the down, right? They're some are knocking on heaven's door, some are retired like George Lucas. They're kind of going their separate ways, and in a way, that magic that happened back in the late 70s, early 80s, this is the last time we're ever going to get it. And there hasn't been, not to say that there aren't good franchises or good films out or good creators out there. I don't mean to imply that, because there are wonderful stories out there to watch. But like this magical combination of all these people, and Kathy Kennedy and Frank Marshall, sorry, I forgot about them. Like all of them coming together to do this is not happening again. And this is the last time that this was going to happen. So like, I don't know if that was a marketing angle that they could have gone with, but I don't know. It's a bittersweet, but at least I'm happy that the movie's good.
I enjoyed it.
And people are enjoying it. Cause if you look at like actual, like, and this is my barometer. not this that I'm about to say. The thing that I'm about to say next is the barometer. But if you go to Rotten Tomatoes and you look at the user ratings, actually it's 88%, really good, which I was surprised by because I thought it was going to get review bombed the same way Last Jedi did and whatnot. But like the fact that like normal people on Rotten Tomatoes are giving it good reviews, that's a good thing. But my other barometer is the toxic environment of Facebook. And if you go into Facebook, and you go into the comment section of any Star Wars project, it's full of toxic, right wing incel, all the trash talk that you are accustomed of toxic fandom about Star Wars, like let's fire Kathy Kennedy, all that stuff. It's there, like saying how every Star Wars project sucks. So out of curiosity, I started being like, okay, well, let's see what the narrative is with Indiana Jones. And to my honest surprise, like for the most part, when I read the Facebook comments on Indy, positive. People are just like, I really enjoyed the movie. Like I was excited. Harrison Ford looks great. I was just like, oh, crap. I did not expect positivity. I did not expect positivity from Facebook. So... take that for what you will. I don't know.
Yeah.
But shifting gears into like another tentpole franchise that we thought was going to make a killing. And it's a movie that I wasn't sure I really wanted to talk about just because of a little controversy with its lead actor. But The Flash.
We can talk about the film itself. Yeah. The Flash was
another movie that I thought was going to just destroy the box office. And quite the opposite. It was. It was destroyed itself by it. And a movie that, as opposed to Indiana Jones, and this was my review on Letterboxd, I actively disliked. A movie that I usually like, even if it's a movie I'm not enjoying, like I'll find the redeeming qualities and the story elements that are, you know, because, you know, you don't want to just discredit a movie that like hundreds of people kind of put blood, sweat, and tears into it to like make and put on the big screen. But like this was one of the few movies that I went to see it with my girlfriend, and she's not a comic book fan, and she's like not as going into the movies as I am. So every time she comes to the movie theater with me, I'm very thankful that she's indulging going to the movies, right? And I want her to have a good time. And with this one, I'm just like
uh-oh.
Halfway through that movie, I apologize to her. I'm just like, I'm sorry that I met you come to see this film. She obviously disliked it, and I probably disliked it even more than her because I had high expectations for it. Because The Flash was a movie that obviously I was excited for it before the whole controversy started, but when that trailer dropped and we got that whole Michael Keaton thing, I'm just like, well, let's go.
I am ready.
I'm going head first into this. So Nani, what did you think of let's not talk about box office anymore, it failed, whatever. But what do you think of like how it happened with that movie?
Okay, so I wasn't thinking it was going to be good. So I think that helped temper my expectations, because even though when that trailer dropped, I got really excited, I've just become accustomed to be disappointed by DC, just because I need to protect my heart, because it's Wonder Woman 1984. It was so bad.
But and the Batman was great.
And then the Batman was great. But you also have to temper with what they do with Batman sometimes, because Batman is one of those few that usually turns out being good. Like the Christopher Nolan ones were so good. I actually thought Ben Affleck was excellent as Batman. His problem is he never got his own solo.
His own movie.
Know how his Batman would have turned out.
Would have been good.
Yeah. But this one, here's the thing. I'm a really big fan of the Flashpoint Paradox. And once you watch
the animated films, right?
Yeah. So and DC actually does very well in animation, which is why it's always so sad to me that in live action they've never really been able to give us what Marvel has given us, for example. Like the live action has just never been as good as it should be, with its exceptions, because there are some great films out there. But their animation stuff is so good, the shows, the films, everything, that they can just never really stick the landing with anything else. So if they would have stuck to the actual storyline of Flashpoint Paradox, which if you haven't seen it, the animated version is on Max, and there's a graphic novel that's really good on it too. and they had it. They had the makings of it. And then they decided to change it because I don't know why. Because, I mean, Gal Gadot was, you know, in a cameo. So you have Wonder Woman. We have Jason Momoa is still doing Aquaman.
Not a good cameo, you ask me, though.
Yeah. No, it wasn't a good cameo either. But we have her. We have Aquaman. So you could have done the Flashpoint Paradox storyline instead of whatever it is that they did here. So when I started to see that they were changing it, that they're doing like two Ezras, so I was like, I don't think this is going to be good. So I went thinking that it was going to be terrible. So it ended up actually being less.
Even with Michael Keaton, you were like, this is going to be terrible. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be terrible. And I assumed
You were right.
Yeah. No, and then I assumed Michael Keaton was going to end up being just a cameo. So the fact that I got more of him than I was expecting, I actually enjoyed.
So, but I think, well, sorry, I haven't been able to talk about this movie
with anybody, and you hated it.
Yeah, to this level of nerddom, so I'm very quasi-excited for this, but yeah, keep going.
It's okay, it's fine. I mean, I was expecting it to be terrible, so it wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. Mm-hmm. Like, the Michael Keaton parts had me smiling the whole time. The CGI was horrendous. It's some of the worst CGI I've seen in a film.
I agree. The CGI was atrocious. Oh my God,
babies and.
But I don't care too much if CGI is bad if the story is good, because it's just like, okay, well, whatever. Yeah. I mean, fine. But the fact that you add that, it adds to the list of gripes at that point. It's like, well, the movie sucks, so now I'm just gonna find everything that everything I didn't like about it. And that whole baby sequence is just odd.
Oh, it was so bad.
It's just because it's not that it could have been that the idea of it was bad. It's just that the execution was just very odd. I was just very confused throughout the whole movie. I feel like, and that's the thing. Like, it's not about the comedic tone, because I understand that the Flash tonally is more. Yeah. It's closer to Spider-Man, obviously, than Batman. So he's not gonna be brooding. I get that, even though I don't read the comics and I don't watch the DC animated stuff. But I understand that this tone was supposed to be different. But even then, I feel like this was closer to, oh my God, I forgot the original Batman's name, Adam West. This was more Adam West in tone.
Boom.
This was more Adam West meets Batman and Robin. Joel Schumacher Batman than a Snyderverse film, because it's technically a Snyderverse film.
Still,
And I'm not saying that I don't want humor in these movies, because I think humor actually will work. I mean, we've seen it with other superhero movies that are funny, like the first Shazam. I thought was the right balance of humor and stakes.
Yeah.
Not the second one. The second one sucks, and also has a bad Wonder Woman cameo. But this Flash one is just bizarre. It was just bizarre tonally. It's just like, it's supposed to be this thing where he wants to fix the past to help his mom, I mean to save his mom and help his dad, but then he's just like making weird, it's just, and maybe that humor was done for someone else than not me, because I did not connect to the humor of that movie. I feel it was like over the top and campy, and I was just like, it just felt like it was trying really, really hard to like look at us, how not serious we are, like the Snyder cut, and how fun and MCU like we are now. And I'm just saying, it just doesn't work, especially when you're dealing with such a dark subject matter.
Yeah. And Flashpoint Paradox is it hurts. It's a storyline that hurts. So
that's the one that has Damian Wayne. Oh my God. Bruce Wayne's father, Thomas. Right? Thomas Wayne.
Thomas as Batman that murders people.
And his mom, and Martha.
And his mom's the Joker. Yeah. And Wonder Woman and Aquaman are destroying the world because they got into a war because they were having an affair, and Wonder Woman ended up killing Aquaman's wife. So yeah, it's dark and it hurts, and it's a really impactful storyline. I remember when I watched it the first time, I was like, wow, that got real.
But I understand this one not being completely in that tone, because it's trying to reset everything. And according to James Gunn, which I think he lied, it resets everything for the DCU. Didn't. And I'm just like, I'm like, you think you lied. Odd. And they pulled the same joke from the theatrical Justice League that I didn't think worked, which is like when Hey, Wonder Woman puts the lasso of truth on Batman, then Batman's just like, and he's like, dude.
Talking about his feelings.
Yeah, it's just like, I mean, I get that it's funny because Batman's supposed to be, but like, you already did that joke once.
Yeah.
And it didn't land there. It didn't land, at least to me, it didn't land here.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I didn't, and Bruce, I grew up with Michael Keaton as my Batman, and Batman Returns is still one of my favorite Batman films. So I was excited. As most of us probably were.
How did you feel about his scenes?
I think that they were a mixed bag, honestly. I feel like his introduction sucked a little bit just because it's supposed to be this mysterious thing. Oh, who lives here? And they film it in a way that you're not supposed to know who it is, even though all the marketing is just like, oh, it's Michael.
We know it's him.
But you're like, okay, where are we hiding? But then I feel like they were amping up too much the comedy angle on Michael Keaton, and I'm just like, not to say that it's a comedy, like in the Tim Burton ones, because let's keep it real, Batman was kind of funny in Batman Returns. He wasn't like that deadpan Christian Bale Batman. There was some humor to him. But I feel like here, it's just dialed to like a weird point where it's just takes me out of the moment, because it's not the same, and maybe it's not the same character from those films. Maybe it's supposed to look like it, but it's a different one, right? Even though I do think it's the same one because they had the same suits.
Because it was from the film. It was the same mansion, and it was the same Batcave, and they used the original soundtrack whenever he showed up. So that nostalgia aspect, actually, because Michael Keaton is actually a good actor too.
Oh,
and his Batman's fantastic. So he was still the best thing in that film, and it was still not as good as it could have been, because so much of it was teased that it kind of took away from it. So if they would have done just a little tease of him and not as much as they did, I think it would have helped. The other thing was I actually really liked Kara a lot, but then she was barely in it.
Exactly. Michael Keaton, the character I was least excited for was The Flash. But Supergirl, Sasha Calle, it's just Latinas al Poder. But like Michael Keaton, Sasha, Supergirl, it were the things that I was the most excited for.
She looked amazing, and then she was barely in it.
She looked amazing, and she didn't do almost anything in the movie, and her character arc was kind of nonsensical. They break her out of the Russian prison, which is like son of, I think there was like a comic book version of Superman where he lands in the USSR instead of the US. Yeah. And he's like, I forgot the name of that version of Superman, but they were kind of implying that a little bit by her being in Russia, blah, 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 which I thought was interesting. But then they save her. And then she's like, I don't believe in humanity. And then she leaves and sees Zod. And then it's like, I'm going to save humanity. He's like, what? I was like, give me at least 10 minutes more of development here. That character arc went way too quick. But I don't know. It's sad. And, the trailer for Blue Beetle looks good. And it's a Puerto Rican director that did that movie. So I'm excited for it because it does look good. But then at this point, I'm just like, really? Like, am I going to get my heart broken again?
Again,
to an extent, it's happening with Marvel, too. Like Black Panther, Wakanda Forever, even though it's definitely better than all these DC things that have happened, I still wasn't a big fan of it. Like, Secret Invasion, I don't know if you're watching it, but Secret Invasion, it's not bad, but it's not rocking my world. So
I watched, one episode, and I was like, I'll wait for more to come out and then watch them more in a row or something. But it's not Loki.
Not even remotely close. And Quantumania
was terrible. Was actively terrible. So bad.
It looks like a COVID movie, And as respectfully as I can. It looks like a COVID movie. So I don't want to use the term.
Fell asleep.
Let's face it. He can fall asleep anywhere.
No. But not usually during films. And if he does, he'll be like, I need to watch the end because I need to know how it ends. And this time he was like, I don't even care how it ends. It was so bad. I don't even want to torture myself with continuing to watch it.
It's bad. Well, whatever. I don't want to keep trashing films. Because we know we're supposed to be known for being the... let's contextualize and find positives. But... I feel like superhero movies right now are... Well, that's not true because what I was going to say is not completely true because Guardians of the Galaxy 3 was great.
I haven't watched it, that one, actually.
Really, really liked it. And, like, I didn't have that many expectations for it. Like, I thought it was going to be good because mm-hmm. I enjoyed all of the Guardians movies. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I feel Guardians of the Galaxy 3, especially as a trilogy, right? When you look at all three movies and the journeys of all the characters.
Yeah.
Excellent. Good job, okay. James Gunn, in, you know, your final Marvel movie. Because it was, I don't want to call it perfect. But it was, you know, but it was damn good, and it hit me in the feels. So, yeah, it's not to say that there's superhero fatigue or the superhero movies inherently are
bad. And Across the Spider-Verse was amazing.
Oh, yeah, Across the Spider-Verse was incredible. Across the
Spider was amazing. It was so good. It even exceeded the first one, which I was a really big fan of. And this one, the feels, the animation is fantastic. The story beats, all the new characters that we get to meet. It's Across the Spider-Verse is great. So,
yeah.
If you haven't watched that one, that was great. Great.
I feel like Across the Spider-Verse is able to do the multiversal thing that both Flash and Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness kind of failed to do, which is one, use the multiverse to tell an exciting story, and then two, show the possibilities of all the multiversal things coming together. And I feel that both the Flash and Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness kind of failed at doing that. And because a lot of people have been saying that the new phase of the MCU isn't really working because the multiverse is kind of pointless because none of the things have consequences because you can just find the characters again. Yeah. And I'm like, no.
Across the Spider-Verse. Watch it.
I'm just like, Across the Spiverse has multiverse and it does it right. And I think
and it does what you were saying that the Flash failed as well is a good level of humor because there is humor with, you know.
Gravitas.
Yeah, there's gravitas. They did such a good job with, you know, with the relationships there. Gwen and her father and then Miles and his parents and everything that's going on. And it hits you in the feels and it makes you laugh and it's exciting and it's fantastic. And it's proof that if done with care, these films can really be excellent. But if sometimes you do things just for its own sake, like, oh, we're going to make the Flash, like, a little kookier because the other ones are so somber. Well, you need to know where it works and where it doesn't. Not just do it because you want it to be lighter.
Right. I mean, conceptually, that works, but execution-wise, it was a little jarring. Sorry. But, you know, enough of, like, looking into the past of things that didn't work. There's a lot of good things to look forward to. But there's a lot of good things to look forward to. And, you know, one of the things that we were saying at the beginning that worked against Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny is that there's also a lot of movies coming out, especially particularly three, that are big heavyweights in terms of like competition, especially one, which is a juggernaut. And it might not be the movie that people are expecting me to say, but one particular movie that's marketing has been absolutely incredible. And it's pit up against another film that's also going to be great. And from all the looks of it, from looking at predictions and whatnot, it's absolutely going to crush the environment. Yeah. And sorry, Mr. Cruz, it's not Mission Impossible.
Yeah.
It is
Barbie.
I'm excited for Barbie. Ever when they announced Barbie, I was not. I'm just saying, why the hell are we doing a Barbie movie?
A Barbie movie?
I'm like, what does this even mean? Then they announced that Greta Gerwig was going to be the director. I'm like, okay, I'm intrigued.
Yeah.
She's a good director. And then I saw that it was releasing at the same time as Oppenheimer. And then I'm just like, perfect.
That's genius. That's so genius to do. Yeah.
This writes itself. Like, this is the best competition I never knew I needed. But Oppenheimer versus Barbie is one of those love stories that you couldn't have ever come up with. Nani, are you going to watch Barbie? Are you going to watch Oppenheimer? Are you going to do a double feature? And or which one are you most excited for?
Well, it's going to be hard. Oppenheimer's like 3 hours long, right?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So doing them both on a double feature, I used to love doing that. I don't know if I can make it. I'm going to see. Weirdly, though, I think I'm actually more excited for Barbie. But that one might be hard to get Josbando to the theater to go to. Because he's like, I don't care about a Barbie movie. I was like, but have you, the trailers, they look amazing. This is going to be weird and good.
Yes, so, it's going to be weird. That's a good part. That's what I like. When I saw the trailers, I'm like, oh, this is weird.
This is weird, yeah. this
week. I don't know if you saw the second trailer where like Barbie's doing the where she's dancing with all the other Barbies, and then Barbie just stops and say, "Hey, do you guys ever think about dying?" When I saw that, I'm just like, "This is
what
bad shit, insane."
Barbie I'm being ready. Existential.
Barbie like, being existential. And like the whole self-awareness of like no one caring about Ken, and then being like, no, we gotta figure out why. I'm like, this is great. It's so absurd. It's surrealist. So I'm ready. Yeah.
It's so many of the things because I hated Barbies growing up because it's, you know, you're a girl, you have to have a Barbie doll. That's how it works. You love them. And I was like really fatalist about them. Like I would put them in their car and like throw them down the stairs and be like, accident, they're dying, whatever, like horrible, horrible things.
So and you saw Death Becomes Her and you were just reenacting that movie, basically.
A little bit. So I wasn't like a big fan of the dolls. My sister was, and I would like, obviously, mine never had their shoes on, and I would like bite their feet because it was like,
I'm not going to ask about that. Never mind. Continue, please.
So it was always really weird to me how, like, their feet were always pointed because they always had to have the heels on and all that stuff.
I was just, like, blown away. I'm like, how the hell did they do that? That looks amazing.
When they actually have her, like, flat, and she's like, look at my feet, and being all traumatized about, like, her feet falling down, it's like, I have to watch this movie. This is totally for me. So I usually, Wally usually does what I tell him to do. So I think he'll probably just, I'll tell him, we're going to go watch Barbie and he'll probably come with me. So I think I'm more excited for that one. I mean, not to say that Oppenheimer is probably going to be fantastic, but Barbie is just going to be something
It's going to be
else.
Insane, right? It's going to be insane. That's the thing. It's just like, I think the internet is in agreement with you. I think that everyone knows that Christopher Nolan is going to do a good movie. And everyone's excited and saying, we're going to see Cillian Murphy be amazing. And the movie's going to be a cinematic masterpiece and whatever. But Barbie's just like this.
Like,
why is this movie happening? Why is all this amazing, or all these amazing creators part of it? Like Ryan Gosling as Ken, I'm just like loving it. And then Simu Liu as like another Ken. You got Michael Cera. I'm just like, you're mixing so many people in this movie that's just ridiculous, and I'm here for the chaos. So I already got a t-shirt. I got the t-shirt that says Barbenheimer with the date. So I'm into the meme. I'm ready.
I think you're gonna do the double feature, right?
Well, the thing is, I'm trying, but the problem with the double feature is that I was checking Showtime, the advanced screenings for Barbie specifically, because the Music Box in here in Chicago is doing a 70mm screening of Oppenheimer, so on film, as Christopher Nolan intended. So I will preferably do Oppenheimer in 70mm at the Music Box. But then for Barbie, I want to go to the Alamo and see it. You know, it's kind of have the two vibes, like the the actual cinematic one and then the blockbuster experience. But Barbie, every time I look up at the screenings, they're all sold out.
Oh yeah.
So there's gonna be a little juggling here to be able to figure out how I'm gonna be able to acquire some Barbie tickets so that we can figure that out. But it'll be fun. I'm excited. Yeah. But besides Barbie, there's also Mission Impossible, but I really don't have too much to say about Mission Impossible because
Mission Impossible 10th one or something?
I think it's 9, but it's a two-parter.
There's two-parter, which is gonna be good. I mean, it's going to do well, obviously. This is Tom Cruise right after Top Gun, and he's doing all those stunts that they're talking about. And the Mission Impossibles tend to always be entertaining, but I mean, they're Mission Impossible movies. I don't think there's much we can, like, deep dive into it.
It's like the, what's the name of this one? I forget. It's just, the thing is, I remember when Ghost Protocol came out, and I really like Ghost Protocol. That might be, like, my favorite one after Mission Impossible 3. I mean, it is the one after Mission Impossible 3. But you know what I mean. It's kind of like one of my top Mission Impossibles. And then I saw Rogue Nation. I think there's another one came out after that. And those were, they were fine. I'm just saying, okay, I haven't seen a memorable. And apologies to people that disagree.
Yeah.
Sorry to all you Mission Impossible fans out there. But I don't think there's been like a memorable Mission Impossible since. Ghost Protocol.
Ghost Protocol. Yeah, I think I agree with you on that. Yeah.
But obviously I'm going to see this one because you know it's Mission Impossible. You have to see them, and they're perfect blockbuster movies.
They're great summer films.
So, you know, we'll see. We'll see. It's kind of exciting for us as moviegoers to be able to have all these movies to have in the cinema to be able to see, because it's exciting to like have movies back and have all these blockbusters to be able to enjoy. But kind of sad that it played against our boy indie. But you know, but that's fine. You know, it's fine. It's a good movie.
I got a movie I enjoyed.
And a movie I'm gonna rewatch. Mm-hmm. And a score that I was listening to the score at work, and the score is beautiful. So John Williams, you don't need me to tell you. Good job.
You're amazing.
Yeah. But good job. but in looking forward, you know, we're looking forward to movies that are coming out in the next couple of weeks or months. But you know, this is gonna be a hiatus now for Lucasfilm between Indiana Jones and whatever theatrical release is coming next. And I don't know if this is gonna be a moment of self-reflection for Lucasfilm to kind of figure out
what direction to take.
I don't want to say fix, because I don't feel that they need to fix anything, but to kind of, how would they do things differently to make sure that new Star Wars films are successful? Because I don't think, if Indiana Jones has proven something, and Solo has proven something, and Rise of Skywalker has proven something, is that just because you have a recognizable IP and a franchise that people love, that it will automatically mean that you're going to do extremely well at the box office. So I think the next movie that's coming out, and it's actually the movie that I'm most looking forward to from everything that they've announced, is the New Jedi Order film starring Daisy Ridley back in the role of Rey Skywalker. So I think that's a 2025 film, so it's still a year and a half away. But Manny, what are your expectations?
What else do we know about it?
We know very, very little. Nothing. And I'm actually, since I'm drawing a blank, that's why I asked you that question, so you can kind of answer what you're looking forward
while
to.
While I look for information
for it. Thank you.
I'm still really excited that it's getting made at all. I mean, I thought Daisy Ridley was kind of done with the character. I wasn't really sure what they were going to do moving forward. So when that was announced, the first time we heard about it was during Celebration, correct?
Yeah.
So that was huge. And I remember when news first started coming out, I thought it was like fake news. And then when I actually saw, you know, the panel on the Celebration stage and everything, and when Daisy came out, I mean, I was really, really excited, because I think we've always wanted to do Star Wars, like, stuff in the future that we don't really know, or stuff in the past that we also don't know about, like take things out of the usual time frame, that as good as the time frame is, and I will continue to watch everything that comes out, it's exciting to know about an era that nothing has been heard of before, and to maybe see an actual success story of doing a Jedi Academy, you know, because they have so far failed physically. So yeah, so I'm really excited to have her back. I would really love if they could bring Finn back in as well. And
he has to, right? They have to bring back the trio.
Yeah. So what do you think?
Here's let me answer your first question, so we can get the facts out of the way before going to speculation territory. So what we do know is that the movie will be directed by Charmaine Obaid-Chinoy, and she's a very accomplished filmmaker. She's won like all the awards that you can think of. And that the movie is set 15 years after The Rise of Skywalker. So there is going to be like a good time jump.
A healthy time frame jump.
And for me, that's good, right? Because what you're saying, like, we can be far enough away from the sequel trilogy to finally do something that's new and exciting. Because as we've talked about,
and allow them creative rights to like be a little bit, come up with their own storyline.
Yeah. That's the thing. Like, there's no limits to what they can do now. It's just like, well, we're in the future. Well, we don't have to be locked into the timeline. It's not like Andor or any of like these shows set in the Galactic Civil War or something that they have to tie into the story and the characters because all the narrative is set up. Here it's just like, it's a brand new horizon. So do whatever you want. So for me, like, as an architect and a designer, one of the things, and I've said this a million times, and I'll say it a million times over, one of the things that, and it's a pet peeve, I know, One of the things that I did not like about Force Awakens and Rise of Skywalker, because Last of Jedi was trying to break away from this, but have those movies be too close design-wise to the original trilogy. Like, the X-Wings look the same, the TIE Fighters look the same, like, everything looked the same. Even though it was 30 years after the fact, but design, apparently all the designers and architects in the galaxy...
Get me new ships, get me new
buildings, They didn't want to do new things. They were comfortable just doing the same thing for 30 years. Even though, like, in the prequel, between prequel trilogy and A New Hope, there's, what, 19 years or something, and everything drastically changed from episode 1 to episode 4. So, like, I wanted to see that progression so that I can see that there's a passage of time and things are different. We're in a new era and things look different. So I would hope that New Jedi Order takes advantage of that, and it's like has a distinct visual style to kind of show that the galaxy is moving in a new direction. So, I mean, not to say that we can't see familiar things, but you know, but I wanna see new things, because I wanna feel like I'm in a new era and not just a rehash of an old one. That's in the aesthetic standpoint. But in terms of like narrative standpoint, like one of the exciting things about the prequels was seeing the Jedi Council. Seeing the Jedi Council and seeing many Jedi and seeing, you know, it was a downfall of the Jedi, but it was still like, you know, there were thousands of Jedi, and we got to see Jedi in action and all those things. And obviously they were destroyed in episode 3, so we didn't see them in the original trilogy. Yeah. So when we think we're going to kind of see Luke's new Jedi Order in the sequel trilogy, it's just like, actually, his Jedi Order failed. Because Kylo Ren and Snoke were able to destroy and decimate his Jedi Academy, which is kind of cool to see, maybe in an animated show or something. Lucasfilm, come on, because that's really interesting. Pero, we haven't been able to kind of see the new Jedi and what is supposed to be like the... Because Rey, and in the books, Luke kind of revamped what the Jedi Order was, right? So it's like, okay, let's make a new Jedi Order and like this for this new generation and this new context. And I feel that from what I've seen in the books and what we saw like in the movies, like Luke still did the Jedi in the same way that the Jedi had been done before, which is the Jedi that failed, which is why he failed with Ben, which kind of narratively makes sense. But now I want to see Rey be like, no, we have to make sure that if we're reestablishing the order, that it's not that order, because that order failed. So I want to see like how these Jedi are new, how they're different. And obviously I want to see more Jedi. I don't want to just see Rey. Definitely want to see Finn too, because we already confirmed that he's Force sensitive. So we have to kind of pull the trigger on that story. But I want to see more Jedi, you know, and it's something that I'm excited for and something that we've been robbed of seeing like more Force users do Force things.
And from different races and different. So to see more like what we've gotten in, you know, the animated stuff that we would get a lot of these different Jedi, so.
Which we will see in Ahsoka, because we know
we will see in Ahsoka,
We have Ahsoka. I mean, Sabine's not a Jedi, but Sabine's going to be using Ezra's lightsaber. Eventually, we'll see Ezra. We have those two dark side orange lightsaber dudes, which I'm very excited for. So that show kind of has a little bit of what I'm asking here. But what I really want to see here is what we're going to see in The Acolyte. And The Acolyte, one, is the show I'm most excited for. But two... And I don't know why Lucasfilm hasn't released a trailer for it, but that trailer that they showed at Celebration was incredible, especially the ending of the trailer. And I think we talked about this when we were talking about Celebration. But it's been a minute, so I'm going to refresh your memory. When the trailer ends, all of a sudden, it's just like, you'll see like a bunch of like Jedi just coming up. And I'm like, are they going to do the thing? Are they going to do the thing? And all of a sudden, like all the Jedi start... lighting up their lightsabers, and I'm just like, they did it. And that's what I want from Rey's thing. I want them to pull the trigger and be like, oh, there's more than two lightsabers. It's like, no, I still want the story to be her story, right? And not get distracted by having a million different plot lines, but give us something new. Let's not rehash the same things. So
and there's so much possibility there. So I really hope that they take that to heart and try to explore those possibilities, not just stick to what has been comfortable so far. Because their hands aren't tied to those earlier storylines. They can completely do something new. So I really hope they do. and we get something new and exciting.
Do you think that this movie is going to have a sequel? Or do you think that it's going to be... Obviously, we haven't even gotten this, and we're only talking about sequels.
I know.
Which is a little unfair. Well,
but, Star Wars, I mean...
I would want to, like, see Rey's stories continue, right? Especially, like, depending on where this particular story goes, I would potentially want to see more.
Yeah, and if we're doing as in it's part of the episodes, they usually have trilogies, so it would work.
Do you think it's going to be episode 10?
I don't know if it's going to be episode 10. I think it could be. It could also work as a standalone, either way, I think. But I maybe think that they should go into the mentality filming it that they did for A New Hope. Like, this is one ones, but it works as its own film as well. So if we don't get any, we still get a good story, but leave it open enough that it could continue if it's successful. So
okay, I can
think
dig it.
That's what would work the best.
Should Mark Hamill return as Luke Skywalker as a Force ghost?
I don't know. I honestly, his ending in The Last Jedi is one of the most perfect things I've seen. I mean, it still makes me cry. It's so good. I think we kind of need to say goodbye to the character.
Interesting.
But I don't know, because I don't know why people hate on The Last Jedi. I think it's so good, but I think that send off that Luke got was exceptional. But I mean, he did become a Force ghost, so if Mark Hamill's up for it and if it's done well, then I always love me some Luke. So,
like I do think that we should have like Force ghost Luke, just because it. Well, one, because I love Luke Skywalker and I always want to see him. And I don't want his character to be like a Force ghost that shows up all the time.
Overwhelms Rey's story
exactly.
And then it becomes all about
But I think it would be interesting to like have him be someone that kind of helped her like build the academy and be like, oh shit, here's where I was wrong with Ben. Here's now I can finally see like all the shortcomings of the Jedi back then because X, Y, and Z. Like it kind of fulfills his vision from... It's time for the Jedi to end, but then amends it to be like, oh, wait, you can fix things instead of just killing them.
Ending them completely, yeah.
So have him be like someone that's helping Rey. This is going to sound super fanficky, but maybe Rey has like a council of Force ghosts, right? Maybe she has
there's
like,
no other Jedi, so she needs...
Because there's no other Jedi, and they're like, hey, you know, maybe let's Force ghost Yoda. And if you want to pull the trigger and just like have Ewan McGregor instead of Alec Guinness be Obi-Wan or Qui-Gon or whatever. Maybe Ahsoka finally is dead at this point. So you just have a ghost. Okay, maybe there's too many ghosts at this point. But you know, but like have like Jedi from the past have helped Rey. Because it's kind of a payoff from Rise of Skywalker, right? She's like, and I am all the Jedi. It's like, okay, well, show me.
Show me that you are all the Jedi.
She didn't mean it literally. She actually figuratively because they all talked to her. So I don't know. We still have a healthy amount of time
to wait. Actually
2 years, because I think it's coming out in December. So we still have a healthy amount of time to speculate responsibly about. And we call it New Jedi Order, but that's probably not going to be the name of the film. So there's still time to figure out what we think it's going to be about, and then finally discover we were wrong when there's a trailer at some point.
Wrong.
not always. We were pretty good with Indiana Jones.
Yeah, true.
Indiana Jones, I think we had a couple of things.
Also, because we had Alex's help. So.
Hey, don't cut us some slack. We're Alex. I love Alex. He's a very good friend. No disrespect, but he has some wild ideas too, just like us. So he's wrong too. He's wrong too.
Yeah.
While we wait for New Jedi Order, we still have a bunch of things to look forward to. Not just Barbie.
Ahsoka's coming out soon.
But we have Ahsoka coming out soon. And we have Skeleton Crew. And most importantly, The Acolyte. So there's going to be a lot of storytelling to be discussing in the months ahead. So it's going to definitely be an exciting time, especially... I know Trey has been a little spotty this year. But it's been a... We've been butterflies, I feel like, this year. We've been in our cocoon, in our chrysalis, rediscovering ourselves and doing different things. So, but it doesn't mean that we're gone. No one's ever really gone. It just means that we're figuring out life and try it and bringing everything together. But I think we're gonna find some stability with Ahsoka moving forward.
Yeah, it's gonna be fun. It's gonna be fun to watch.
100%.
See how they translate from the animated versions that we've seen so far. Now that it's more than just the cameos.
Yeah. But yeah, I feel this was supposed to be like a shorter episode where we just like,
yeah, and then we just kept going and going and going. And then
we kept going. But you know, those are usually the more fun conversations. So
yeah,
hopefully,
they're not planned.
Hopefully everyone that's listening enjoyed our rantings as much as we enjoyed ranting them. So yeah, I think that's all I had for today.
I think we're done. We are Triad of the Force. Remember to like, subscribe, hit that bell, leave us some comments, let us know what you think of the movies that you've watched so far this summer, what you're looking forward to for the rest of the summer, because there's definitely some bangers coming. Mm-hmm. And if you're excited for Ahsoka, if you're excited for the future films for Star Wars, and, you know, let us know what you think about the Triad and everything else that you're watching. So until next time, we are Triad of the Force. May the Force be with you.